Welcome back to the IFR. Mr. McDonald, our new weekly guest. How are you today, sir? And welcome.
I'm good, thank you, JK. Thank you very much. I'm enjoying being on the other side of a podcast, actually. I've been doing the Welly Sport podcast for the last 6 weeks with Mr. and Mrs. Pratt. So nice to be on the other side and be challenged. And I'm looking forward to being thrown some questions and not worrying about the running order and all those things that come along with running your own podcast. So hats off to the pair of you, and thoroughly enjoyed Mr. Craig's episode last week. Thought it was very insightful about Liverpool and the way they play, and gave me some things to watch on YouTube last week. So hopefully we can do a similar thing for whoever's listening out there today. So yeah, thoroughly looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Also good to have someone who knows a slightly different area of British football, you know, presumably in terms of Scotland. So, you know, you are a Rangers fan, and let's start off today's podcast with a Rangers question. How do you think Rangers have progressed under Steven Gerrard on and off the pitch since he joined in, I believe, 2018?
Yeah, so I don't know how well people know the story, but obviously the last decade hasn't been particularly fun as a Rangers fan. So we liquidation 2012. For various reasons. I don't know the ins and outs of the financial stuff, but essentially dodgy people in charge made some dodgy decisions and didn't tell people about money. And we got ourselves into a horrific amount of debt for a Scottish team. So not sort of worldwide numbers, but 100 million or bigger than that, which would be massive in the SPL for an amount of debt. So what then happened was we got the clubs then had to vote on whether we could come back into the SPL. And then, funnily enough, 10 of them said, nah, we don't want Rangers in that. That gives us all a chance. So then we were then banished down to League Two, third division. And then we had to work our way back up, which took us 4 years. We didn't get out the championship the first year. So we've had we've probably had 10 managers in that time. So people coming, people going, players coming in and out, some players decided to leave as soon as we got relegated. I think that's fair enough. People like Whittaker and Naismith went down and played in the Prem, I think, for Norwich. Other players went down to the Championship. And look, you can't, it's absolutely not against them. But again, managers did the same. So Ali McCoy stayed for a bit, didn't like it, came back for a bit. Walter Smith came back. And again, that gave us a bit of hope. He was our sort of great manager in the 90s. So that restored a bit of faith. But all in all, up until 2018, we'd had nothing. We had a cup final, I think, the year we were in the Championship. We lost, and that was about as close as we got to sort of any hope. We hadn't played Celtic. I remember we got a one-all draw in the League Cup, I think, with Clint Hill scored in the 89th minute, and that was sort of the highlight of the last 7 years for us before 2018. And then I remember distinctly the day it was announced, and you'll get to this point, I think, JK, Mr. Jennings, you'll know this, when you sort of get a little bit older, and I'm not old, but you get a little bit older, and the managers, you remember them as players. And obviously, Steven Gerrard, what a player. And you just get so excited. And I think the 25 to 40-year-old sort of market of Rangers fans were now inspired again. Because all we'd known was just horror, like a horrible experience. Most of us were very young in the 2008 UEFA Cup run, and we were too young for the 90s. So we just had no positivity. So the initial reaction was amazing. And he was onto a winner. He couldn't do any wrong. We were straight into the Europa League, I think, that year. So we were playing like 4 days after the start of July when he signed his contract in sort of round one of the Europa League qualification. And we sort of beat a team from Luxembourg that we'd lost to the year before. And so all of a sudden, he's onto a winner. So I can remember that happening. And look, it's happened a little bit over the world, hasn't it, in terms of wonderful ex-players have now become managers. And that effect it has on you as a fan is second to none. He then had a little bit of luck in terms of we beat Celtic the second time we played them, which probably one of my favourite goals ever scored, when Jack put it through Scott Brown's legs for a goal in the sort of 80th minute or so, and beat them. And Brendan Rodgers was the manager. So that was a little bit of a storyline there with Gerrard and Rodgers. But that, I think, that moment sealed it for everyone. Right, this is us. We're back. We're gonna win everything. And so that 4 months eradicated all of the last 8 years for that sort of middle group of fans, I would say, which I was in at the time. So I would have been 26 or 27. So that would have been his effect at the very start of it, I think.
Interesting first year, wasn't it, for him? So as you said, I'm a massive, even as a United fan, I'm a massive Gerrard fan, a massive England fan. And at the end of April of that first year in charge, I mean, his win percentage was, I believe, just under 50% in all competitions. But that may be a tale of the times for Rangers. But what's really quite miraculous is that now overall win percentage stands at just over 60%. I mean, the past 12 months have been outstanding for Rangers as a team and for Gerrard as a manager. And he's playing well, isn't he? He's got the team playing well. He's got some decent players in the squad. But I think he's making, I won't put a spoiler in what JK is going to come on to later, but I wonder if whether or not we're seeing a little bit of Klopp in Gerrard at the moment, in that is he making average players look better than they are? Or does he have a few unsung heroes in there that perhaps could go on to some slightly, I'm not going to use the term larger teams, but perhaps more established European sides at this stage? We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reports we get from sort of the fan sites, or the little bit of insights that you get from the forums and stuff, is that his approach to player management is something these guys have just not had. It's very much focusing on what they can do. He picks a lot of players that fans would go, "Oh, why are we picking Jermaine Defoe this week against a young back four?" Well, it's just because he's the best finisher in the league. Like, it doesn't matter if he's not quick or he doesn't fit a certain mold, or he's the best finisher, and you've got to score goals, and that's what he talks about all the time. And yeah, I mean, Barisic might be out of position at corners, but again, he can header a ball when he is in the right place, so we'll pick him for that reason. And I think it's a modern way of coaching. And I think when you guys were talking last week about, we've changed our mindset and how we build teams, so we build teams from the front backwards now, as a successful model. Well, actually, what Gerrard's doing in sort of the modern coach way is he's starting with, what are the reasons these players are professional footballers? Not why are these players not playing in the Premiership or not playing in La Liga? Or, like, he finds the right things to do. He finds the best things about each player.
Definitely, in terms of that positive atmosphere that Gerrard's created over the last, 24 months or so. And I find that, Rangers at the start of the 1920 campaign, the league title, the SPFL, was in Rangers' hands in a way. And, maybe that sort of little bit of inexperience at, being at the top. I know they've been at the top for the last couple of years now, but maybe that sort of let them down. Obviously, we had the Old Firm derby against Celtic where, Alfredo Morelos, we'll get on to it later in the show, but he got, the pantomime villain versus, in my eyes, the bigger pantomime villain, Scott Brown. Now, that was, for me, I don't have a team in Scottish football, but I would probably go Rangers over Celtic just because I'm not a Rodgers fan. I wouldn't want him to manage my club because he managed Liverpool. But I do have to say is that, Yanis Hadji looks pretty good in the sense that, obviously he's the son of the best player ever from Romania, but also he stands within his own right. He did go to Fiorentina, he's on loan from Ghent, so he has a chance to make it in Europe. And also, what really impressed me is that Rangers actually beat a really good team in Braga in the Europa League, so they actually, Gerrard's European pedigree sort of came across to the players. And, when you got drawn against Leverkusen, I sort of knew that was going to be the end of the road just because Leverkusen are a top side and Petr Bosz is a more experienced manager. So, I did feel I was sympathetic towards Rangers in that regard.
Going back to what you said there, JK, about beginning of the season and it being in Rangers' hands, I think that's bold, but I understand what you're saying. I think what we're saying there is that Celtic, for the first time in several years, probably were at their most vulnerable point. Rangers probably with Gerrard on the up curve at their highest point, if you like, in terms of motivation and tactical nous. But at the same time, there is still a bit of a gap there. And sir, you'll probably be able to tell us a bit more about this. But that loss, wasn't it? Was it the loss to Celtic? Who did they lose to? They lost a game that they shouldn't have done around January time.
I think it was maybe Hearts.
Yeah, after the winter break came at the worst time you could ever imagine. We'd beaten Celtic 2-1 in the sort of New Year's Day game. One of the best memories I've got with my family, I went around to see my cousin with his young 1-year-old at the time and sat on the sofa, watched that. She had no idea what was going on, mum fuming, but we sat and watched the whole game on New Year's Day. We're only in Scotland for 36 hours and 12 of it was watching Rangers. So we'd beaten them and it was perfect. Like, we honestly, like, you could not have popped my bubble that day. Like, I thought, that's it, we're gonna storm the league now. Celtic are bored, Celtic are tired. They don't fancy it. You talk about experience. I didn't think any of the Celtic players really had that experience of being in a title fight because they've just been storming the league all year. We had it all sort of, we had everything to win, right? Like, they had everything to lose. We had everything. Like, if we came second. So I was super positive. The one negative was that we were still in Europe because we just, Scottish teams just can't cope with that. Just from a squad depth point of view, and I know we'll talk about that a little bit later, but the only worry was that. So I thought winter break would be brilliant, lads will refresh, and actually what I think happened was I think they started to believe their own hype a little bit, and they weren't in that constant model of Gerrard's approach to every single game is it's the biggest game you've ever played. That might be a kid's first game at Rangers, make it the best experience they're ever going to have. And we kind of broke that. That's what we'd got to for the first 6 months. And the winter break just put all that on hold. And we came back and we were terrible. I wouldn't know the stats, but it felt like we were losing every two out of every three games. We lost to Hearts. I think we drew with Kilmarnock at home. And all of a sudden, the gap went from, we'd got it down to 2 points. And we were cruising back to, and now I think it finished at 13, didn't it, by the time COVID kicked in. The league was over within about 3 weeks, and it just went like that. Celtic didn't lose a game, and weren't even close to losing a game, and we weren't even close to winning a game in the space of that end of January, start of February time, which then coincided. Actually, we're talking about Gerrard. That's the first bit of pressure he had. So, in some ways, there are no positives to what's going on in the world, but in some ways for Gerrard, it gives him another bite of the cherry. Because I think if this season had tailed off and we'd got thumped by Leverkusen, like it looked like we were going to be, and all of a sudden we started thinking, is this the ceiling? Like, we're going to come second again. We can't get right past the round of 16 in Europa because we're just not good enough. Scottish teams are never going to have two teams in the Champions League again. So that will never happen. And look, is that all going to happen? Or will people just, when this gets back into next season, will we... Well, we're going to have to, because I know what Rangers fans are like. Will we be back, the hopeful bunch that we are, that Gerrard's going to take us to the promised land? But yeah, the end of the season was a real sour taste. And it was a shame, really, because we'd done so well for 18 months probably before that.
Definitely. And what I found is that initially Gerrard set up as a 4-3-3 with sort of wider wingers and Kant Deus, who's now obviously left the club, and Ryan Kent. But what I've noticed for the last, you know, maybe year or so, is he's brought the forwards closer to either Morelos or Defoe so that they have more support, you know, more interplay. And whether that be Ryan Kent and Hadji, or, you know, I don't, or Scott Arfield, who I think may be playing in the midfield, but, you know, it sort of gives Rangers, in a way, defensively more compactness, but also offensively, you know, Morelos or Defoe, you know, he's not isolated.
He was a good signing, wasn't he, Arfield?
Yeah, proper player. I mean, you're absolutely right. Your analysis is correct. We picked more players around, I would say more like in a Gerrardy type role, guys that go back and forward, guys that we don't shoot very much. He hasn't picked many sort of European star midfielders that will shoot, but he does have long rangey guys that can run for 100 minutes. Ojo's another one. They just keep running. Like, these guys don't stop. And you can see that. And that's what you need to match these guys. Cause we touched on Scott Brown. Look, if you play against Scott Brown, you can't have 5 minutes off, because he's going to keep going and going and going. And you play against Eduardo, you've got to have someone that can track back with him because he's lightning. And we've played against guys like that for the last 3 or 4 years at Celtic. And don't be wrong, we're picking teams to beat Celtic. That's all we're doing. We're buying players so we can beat Celtic each year. And that's maybe a small club mentality actually from Rangers. We're just trying to catch up with them at the moment. Whereas, as I say earlier, in sort of 2000s, we would have been, well, we've got to stay ahead of them as far as we can and compete in Europe. Whereas now, actually, we're trying to catch Celtic. And how do we stop Celtic scoring is probably one of the questions that they ask in the boardroom, which is a bit of a shame. But you can see that in the team we're picking now, absolutely. I think Gerard came with a model of, I'm going to dominate this league. I'm going to change how the SBL looks. We're going to play total football. We're going to play like Liverpool. Like we're going to find the new Salah. We're going to find the new Alexander Arnold, and it's going to be brilliant. And actually, that isn't the case because you just can't. Even the best people in the world can't find all these players, and they're not coming to Rangers if they are out there.
Carl, there's a lad that plays for Chelsea. I think it's Gilmore, the young the young Scottish midfielder. Am I right in thinking he's got a younger brother in the Scottish league?
And could potentially. I'm not sure.
And I don't think it's
Gilmore. Rangers. Used to play for Rangers, sir.
Yeah, I think he might even be there. I've heard a rumour that his younger brother is the real deal. So what we're seeing in Billy Gilmore is obviously massively encouraging for Scottish football, for the Premier League and all the rest of it. Apparently, his younger brother is the absolute business.
Well, where's he going to go?
so just one to keep an eye on. He may even be at Rangers, but he's young. I mean, he'll be like 13.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But just one to keep an eye on. It's
really interesting time. I think I don't think you can underestimate the impact of Darren Fletcher on the whole thing. And I know you two are big Man United fans, and I know you will be big fans of his because people that support Man United tell me how good he is and how important he was to certainly the end of Fergie's era. But I don't think you can underestimate the impact that seeing a Scottish guy who isn't really something different to what the kids are on the playground, he doesn't have a USP really. In terms of his USP would be sort of intangibles, right? His hard work, his teamsmanship, his competitiveness. But
jack of all trades.
Yeah, absolutely. And kids believe, Scottish kids believe again that they can do that. And JK, you'll be too young to remember the sort of the Scottish guys that were in the Premiership in sort of late 80s, early 90s that were giving these kids hope. And then remember, we haven't been in a tournament, professional tournament since 98. So Scottish kids aren't growing up wanting to be footballers. And Darren Fletcher sort of has brought that back, and you're starting to see those guys now come through who would be the right age for that. So Robinson, obviously, Gilmore, McTominay, like these guys are all proper players if we can get them in the right environments, which unfortunately I probably think is outside the SBL now, but if we can get them together in some coherent way. I've listened to a Sky Sports thing with Darren Fletcher talking about being the most capped Scotsman, and he's so proud, like loved every minute playing for the badge, even though he never got to go to a tournament. And I think these sorts of guys, Gilmore, and we're starting to see more Scottish success, I think, in the top league, which is nice.
Scott McTominay in there as well.
Yeah.
Like Lancashire, born in Lancashire, but, you know, thick Lancashire accent, but, you know, Scottish by blood, so.
Scottish surname. That's all that counts.
Speaking of the SPFL, should we move on to sort of a more wider analysis of the league? So, you know, what I've got down here is Celtic. We obviously covered your beloved Rangers, Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts, maybe Kilmarnock as well, who were under Steve Clarke before he took the Scotland job.
Yeah, so in the certainly the 5 or 4 years since we've been back, it goes up and down. Other than number one is number one. There's basically 11 teams, and then another couple in the sort of that bounce up and down. Ross County's St Mirren's that all sort of compete for relegation every year, and it's a really funny one. Like the Scottish Premier League always got thrown at it that it's the least, like it's just so boring, it's always the same two teams, and I would always argue like, yeah, but it's the same like 3 or 4 teams that win the Premiership in England, and there's only 5 teams that have ever won it over 30 years, so it's the same as like 2 teams winning it every over 50 years or whatever. And And actually, we're all just the same, aren't we? Like, our middle eight teams could finish anywhere. You could throw them up, and whichever way they land, 1 year will be completely different the next year. And Hearts had a bit of a run, sort of finished above us. We came third 1 year; they came second.
Under Craig Levein?
Yeah, under Craig Levein. Yeah, and Aberdeen obviously have their moments, but these teams, JK, I think the difference is, when I talk about small club mentality with Rangers, it's these teams just cannot do it over a sustained period of time for longer than a sort of 6 or 7 month period. Now, that might be enough to come second in the league. If you have good 6 months and Rangers have a bad 6 months, you'll finish second. But they cannot, day in, day out, match what Steven Gerrard and 50,000 people are bringing at Ibrox, or what Brendan Rodgers and what Celtic are doing at Parkhead. Every single time you play at Celtic, it feels like a cup final. Every single day at Ibrox, like, of those 50,000, 10,000 will never have been before, and they're thinking of that day forever. Like, I remember my first time there was a Champions League third round qualifier, and I can still remember it so distinctly. That first time you go into these places, it'll be the same for you guys at Old Trafford, on a slightly smaller scale. And that, you just cannot cope with that. If you're at Aberdeen or at Hearts, you might beat them. And then, yeah, you have a sort of cup final mentality yourself, but you can't have a cup final mentality for 38 games. They just peter out. And you'll have seen it again with Manchester United. You just beat these teams over a long period of time because teams just can't deal. And the cream rises to the top, really, in the Premier League. And it is a shame. The Scottish Premiership is devoid of talent, other than certainly the first two teams. Like, they're not great players, and you see these guys. They go from sort of League One, League Two into the SPL, or sort of bounce back and forth. They're not going from Aberdeen to the Premiership anymore. And so, yeah, the SPL's in a funny place. It's kind of stagnated a little bit, I would say. I can't see a way in which you'll break the top two for a while again, unless, but we couldn't have done that until we cheated the money, right? So that sort of upset the apple cart a little bit for a short period of time. But to be honest, I think the SPL's in a pretty safe place at the moment. And I think, I wouldn't know the exact number, but maybe 15 points between us and third by the end of COVID. And that was after us having a terrible 4 weeks, right? So that brought us back into the middle. I think it's like a 30-point difference at one point. So it's a bit of a shame, but it suits Rangers.
You know, I just feel that Scottish football, you know, in the 80s, like you mentioned, Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness, just, you know, a few names that come to mind. But, you know, Scottish football was the big thing. And I don't know, you're right, it is devoid of talent. And if you had more players coming through, like Billy Gilmore, had he stayed at Rangers, then Rangers, for me, would have been a better team, because Billy Gilmore reminds me a little bit of Busquets in the mold that he's a metronome, because you get the ball to him, he'll pass it off. And he looks so composed in a Chelsea shirt, so yeah. It's a shame that he didn't stay at Rangers. But, you know, we have to talk about the elephant in the room now, sir. Alfredo Morelos.
What a player. What a player. I rate him very highly. I think there are a few players I've seen, JK, in the sort of 20 years or so that I've followed Rangers properly, that I think they're too good for Rangers, they're too good for the SPL. People like Arteta come to mind, Pedro Mendes to an extent when he played, Lovenkranz. Mostly European players. We don't have many South Americans, but he fits that sort of mold of, they're just ahead of the game mentally, so much further. The difference you see with Morelos is, than those guys that I've talked about, those guys are generally midfielders, so it's far more obvious, because they'll pick a pass, but there won't be anyone at the end. So I remember Arteta got slated in a Rangers shirt for a certain period, because his pass percentage was like 70% or something, and Xavi's was 97%, and people were saying, well, why can Arteta not do that in the SPL? And actually, he was passing the ball for where people should be, and no one was reacting to that. And you get the same thing with Morelos. Morelos will make run after run, but our midfield aren't going to see that. And I think when he does get it, and you've seen he's physical, he's strong, powerful, loves a fight, which is probably where you mean the elephant in the room. He's combative, and and he just scores goals, and he loves scoring goals. So, I don't think we'll have him for much longer. But I think he's a proper player.
I completely agree, just because he has that fight, that hunger. But luckily, he has Gerrard on his side. You know, he was a captain at Liverpool. He obviously dealt with the Suarez situation as well. So he has the experience to sort of, you know, and he's done that. He's taken Morales to the side and he's sort of explained to him, you know, tried to convert that sort of hunger and at times frustration into, you know, helping him grow as a player. And, you know, he's getting linked with the likes of Borussia Dortmund, you know, teams in Europe. I'm pretty sure there may be a PSG link, teams in the Premier League. So, you know, there is something special about him. And what I find interesting is that, you know, he's not that tall. He's obviously a big presence, but I would say that he still has that little bit of that diminutive sort of core body strength that helps, you know, small players like Messi and, you know, Maradona in years gone by. And I would liken him to, you know, let's say you were making comparisons to other players in Europe. I would say probably Lautaro Martinez of Inter comes to mind as that sort of, you know, dynamic, sort of combative forward. And, you know, Martinez has obviously got a much better team around him. So, you know, put Morelos in a better team and I would say he's going to get you goals. And the Jermaine Defoe signing for me was a masterstroke, just because Jermaine Defoe, he's a Premier League proven goal scorer. He's literally done it at, I would say, three or four different clubs. He's experienced and he's been around quite a few dressing rooms. So Morales also learning from Defoe is actually a really big boost for him. So
absolutely. And I think what's really interesting when you talk about surrounding these players, particularly these little strong strikers, he plays with his back to goal a lot, and that's not that much fun when you haven't got good players around you. So he kind of has to change his game and be a sort of running behind players and get it and score. And I don't think that's his game. I think actually at his best, he will get the ball early and he'll get it outside the box. He'll give it and then he'll go and that's where he'll get his goals. But he just can't do. He just can't do that at the moment. I mean, playing with Defoe, obviously, the way that works, Defoe usually goes past him and hangs around until the ball gets in. We might try and throw in a few crosses here and there, but generally with those two up front, you try and go through the team with intricate passing, or as intricate as the guys can do. But, I mean, the challenge with him is obviously, I mean, you'll have the stats in front of you, but a million red cards in his first year. And then and what that means as a young player is people start to say, well, that's how we beat you and that's how we get you. And you saw that's how Scott Brown did it. And Scott Brown made him punch him in the face or elbow him in the face in an Old Firm game distinctly. So that was a red card. But that's changed. And like you're talking about, Steven Gerrard has spoken with him and has done a lot of work with him. He was very much better this year. When he got his red card in this year's Old Firm, it was a way different feel. I know he went off and he did a stupid celebration. I think he did a sort of cut your throat thing, which I think was stupid and impetuous. But the red card reaction itself was a little bit different. He sort of laughed and he was a bit more relaxed compared to 12 months ago. He would have been fuming, like he would have been punching, he would have been kicking. And I think he's kind of worked out now that this is what teams are going to do to me, and I just need to understand that I can't keep showing a reaction. I think he needs a good European campaign. If we get one more year out of him, he'll want a good European campaign. He'll be seeing it as a sort of market window opportunity for him. He'll have bigger dreams than playing for Rangers, I think.
I think definitely that he has the potential. Problem is, I think he can show week in, week out. We've obviously seen glimpses, but also his temperament will get better because, as I said in the last podcast, composure and game intelligence are two things you develop over time. And, you know, this is not a peak Alfredo Morelos, nowhere near, because he has the goal-scoring instinct. He'll link play better as long as, you know, he's got more creative players around him. No disrespect to Ryan Jack and Scott Arfield, and, you know, Joe Aribo, and likes of Shea Yojo, but you are just runners. I mean, and once he, let's say he went to Dortmund, you've got Jadon Sancho, you've got the likes of Gio Reyna, who's also coming through, Marco Reus, Erling Haaland, you know.
We could just get all those to Rangers. Why don't we just sign all those guys? That would be all right.
Financial fair play. Out of the window. But you think of the players he could play alongside, and, you know, football's not a one-man game. And, you know, you could point, oh, but Messi dependency, Barcelona or Ronaldo, Real Madrid, but those are freak players because they have the output of 50 goals a season, which they are one of the only players who can do it. And Morelos, as I said, in a better team, he'll have better output. And, you know, he'll be less frustrated as a result because some of the passes that, you know, Jack or Arfield couldn't find, for example, let's say he went to Dortmund, the likes of Mo Dahoud, Royce and Sancho would be able to find. So that would also ease his frustration. But he should be grateful that Rangers gave him, you know, the spotlight because he is what the best player Rangers have at the moment. And, you know, I'm not too sure how Ryan Kent's been this season, but I would say, you know, Candeias did give Rangers a different option, although he was aging out a little bit, so hence why he took the move to Turkey. And I would say Morales probably been better for it because Defoe came in, and as I said, Defoe is, for me, like a calming presence for Morales because there's someone to talk to in the dressing room.
Absolutely, and I think that's, Your points are valid. I think that I really enjoy the idea that he's grateful. And I think that is something that a lot of players who have moved on from Rangers and potentially used it as a stepping stone in some regards would always be thankful for to the club. What Rangers offers, and I think this is why it's so good for Stevie as well, what Rangers offers is you get that big club atmosphere, but at a level below. So when you think, you know, if I think about the manager stuff, I was thinking about this morning, like, Frank Lampard, obviously doing really well now. His first experience was at Derby, the Championship, or Ole Gunnar was, his first experience was over abroad, wasn't it, JK? Where was it? Where did he start? Norway?
In the Norwegian league.
Yeah, in Norway. And these sorts of things.
He was a reserve team manager originally, and then he went to Molde, then came back to Cardiff, and then Molde.
Yeah,
then
so these guys sort of go, these guys have gone to sort of small clubs, but no, there's not going to be like 10,000, 12,000 people there, whatever. Not on TV very much, whereas Stevie has just gone, I'm going to go to Rangers, I'm going to be in Old Firm games, I'm going to do this. Alfredo Morelos, the same. Like, he's been in one of the biggest derbies in the world 10 times. Like, that's a USP for him, and people will love that sort of. He'll be able to come in and say, look, I've worked with Steven Gerrard, I've learned from Jermaine Defoe, as you say, I've played in front of 50,000 people regularly, I've played in Europe, and I'm ready. Like, 35,000, 40,000 of your fans, you're competing for a league. That isn't going to faze me because that's what I've been doing. I'm really hopeful we get one more year out of him. I think he loves the club. He certainly doesn't. He loves Stevie. So I think if Stevie went, he would be straight out the door, and we'd get some cash for him, which would help us. I'm just hopeful we get one more year out of him, and he sort of sees it as his big year next year to say, right, I'm gonna bring a league title home by scoring 25. I'm gonna score 30, but he's not gonna score 30 goals unless he plays 36 games, which you can't do if you get 3 red cards.
True. And just outlook on, you know, we obviously covered Rangers' front end a lot today. In terms of the midfield, you know, options including, as I mentioned, Joe Aribo, Arfield, a.k.a., you know, the Canadian, Scott McTominay or Darren Fletcher, you know, Shea Yojo and Ryan Jack. How do you think, you know, let's say Billy Gilmore did stay at Rangers, do you think he would have walked into this starting 11?
It's hard to say no with the guy that's playing, the level he's playing at the moment. It would be interesting. What, coming back to what we talked about earlier, that Stevie trying to win the league in a sort of total football way, because that's what he'd seen at Liverpool Academy and that's what he'd seen under Jurgen. And he was being touted as being the sort of the next Jurgen Klopp anyway, like he's going to take over the Liverpool job whenever he wants it sort of thing. It'd be interesting to see how Stevie would do with a player like that now, and how he would, where he would fit that all in. Because we don't play, we wouldn't be that calm at the back. Like we wouldn't be rolling it around and finding a deep line midfielder to then bring it forward. We would be getting it into the opposition half. We'd be very much more in a sort of rugby mindset of, why are we wasting time on energy in our own half? We want to use all our energy in their half. So let's get the ball out. Let's get the ball down there, and then we'll play from that position, which will win you games in the SPL, obviously, because you just put teams under pressure. But I think that's when you get found out in Europe, when you have to waste a lot of energy at both ends, and you just sort of have to chase the ball a little bit. So Billy Gilmore would certainly give us that option where we'd have more time with the ball, which would be useful. We don't have as many players that are willing to do that, I don't think. That would be sort of maybe my biggest change, might be that sort of approach to a real diamond effect. And I don't mind us playing narrow, but a more diamond with a sort of deep-lying playmaker, an SCN type, would be nice, that you can just give the ball to, knowing he's gonna put his foot on it, put his head up, and then find a pass, instead of, oh, I'm going to lump it down into that channel, or I'm just going to get it over to the sideline because that's safe for us at the moment.
I mean, I completely agree, because, you know, it's a more attractive style of play, it's a more modern style of play, and, you know, sometimes you have to keep up with the times. And if I was a young player around Europe, so I'm talking, you know, even at the likes of Barcelona, Real Madrid, I'm a young player on the fringes. So, you know, at Barcelona, you could probably say Riqui Puig, or, you know, Real Madrid to a certain extent, Dani Ceballos. I would look at Rangers, I'm thinking 40, 50,000 people every single week. Competitive league where, you know, it's not as technically brilliant as La Liga, but you will develop physically.
Yeah.
And you're under Steven Gerrard, who is, you know, a footballing icon. And, you know, if you feed Alfredo Morelos in good positions, he'll probably score. So, Rangers for me is a great place to go for a young player who wants to get introduced to British life and, you know, doesn't want to make the straight step to the Premier League, because obviously the stakes are much higher there. And it's more results driven. So I'm surprised that more players haven't gone to Rangers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I hope that does change, right? Because someone I think will make the move this summer probably is James Tavernier, the right back. I think he's probably played about 150 games for us, maybe a bit more than that now. I don't know where he's from, maybe Leeds or somewhere like that way back. But he's just unbelievable talent, and he'll get a gig in the Premiership. And you look at sort of right backs and defenders that we've had loads that then go to the Premiership, right? Alan Hutton, Whittaker. I mean, Boomsong wasn't the best, but he started at Rangers. I think he's one. Tavernier's one, I would say, will go into the Premiership. I think you're right, Morelos will go into Europe. I can't see him being a Premiership striker. I don't think he offers you enough in the air for the Premiership for a team that's trying to sort of stay in the middle, mid-tier. But, yeah, I think Tavernier's one that will succeed. He bombs forward as a right back, scores loads of goals, crosses well, easily do a job in sort of anywhere from eighth to relegation, sort of an Aston Villa or something like that. And we'd happily take a few million for him in the same way we took 9 million for Hutton from Tottenham, and that's the sort of, I think you're right, he would be a prototypical example of someone that probably went to Rangers thinking, I'm going to get out of here in a few years, but he's probably done about 6-7 years now, so I agree.
Great servant to the club. And you know, just to go slightly off topic to, you know, St Mirren, am I correct in saying Ronaldinho could have signed for St Mirren?
I'm not sure how true that is. My grandfather, my late grandfather was the coach of St Mirren, actually, assistant coach when Fergie was there. So I spent a lot of time talking about St Mirren. But I'm not sure I've ever heard that Ronaldinho could have gone there. I think he doesn't know where Paisley is.
Oh, it must. I mean, you know, people make the joke that, oh, he's not Brazilian, he's Paraguayan, obviously after the passport scandal. But It would have been momentous for Scottish football had Ronaldinho actually gone.
All of these things. There was one who we were linked with, Kaká, mid-2000s, like at his absolute peak. I think he just won the Ballon d'Or, and people were talking about us signing Kaká. we love to dream, JK. We've got nothing else going on, have we? Like who else? When we signed Dado Perso the year after he carved up the Euros. That was probably one of the signings that got us in trouble in the end. But we signed him. He was touted as going to like everywhere in Europe, everywhere. And he came to Rangers, and I just thinking, what is going on here? This is like we're gonna take over the world. But it's funny when you talk about the Gerrard effect, and probably I know you want to talk about Scottish football in general. But the last sort of thought on Gerrard is, quickly, football's becoming about managers, isn't it? Football's becoming far more now about the managers, and we talk about Pep's City, and we talk about Klopp's Liverpool, and people talk about Fergie's United and Wenger's Arsenal. It's not the players. And other than sort of Messi's Barcelona or Ronaldo's Real, they're about the only teams, proper sort of teams that people talk about as sort of player-driven. And I think that's the thing I'm learning now, the more football I watch. Players will come and go, particularly at teams like Rangers. It happens less at United because you're sort of a pinnacle for people to get to. But and you embrace that as a fan. It's fine. What it means is you enjoy every moment you get with these players. They might not stay for 20 years. They might not be the next Barry Ferguson. They might not be the next Lee McCullough. But that when they play for 3 years, let's embrace it and enjoy every game because they might go. And Steven Gerrard's going to be here until he's got something better. And then we'll get a new manager in for a long time. And that's what I'm learning, and I've learned to deal with more. Like it used to make me quite upset when players left and they didn't show loyalty. But actually, I'm understanding where Rangers fits in the whole sort of tier system of football across the world, and I'm quite happy with it now.
I mean, I completely agree. Just because managers are now as much of a commodity as players, because you know players. There's not much more leadership in football, as in your old school leaders, in the sense of Graham Souness, Roy Keane, you know, Vincent Kompany to a certain extent, where, you know, they'll take control of the dressing room, they'll speak up. And football's not that sort of game anymore, where it's sort of more manager driven. Like, for example, I was watching All or Nothing yesterday, yeah. The Man City documentary.
Yeah, and brilliant.
Pep drives everything because... Yeah. He's the manager, and managers have always done it. It's just managers now have more of an emphasis and more of the spotlight on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about Pochettino possibly going to Newcastle on a £19 million a year deal, and Spurs would have to pay, Spurs would get £12.5 million. You know, thinking back to maybe even like 5-6 years ago, you wouldn't imagine that a manager... you know, managers would have compensation agreed. Yeah. I remember very few cases of that actually happening.
Yeah.
You know.
Jose was sort of the first big one, wasn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's different times that we're living in terms of football, and I guess we sort of have to come to terms with it, because a manager is a key individual in running the club. And speaking of running the club, obviously Rangers have been in administration, and you know, for me, the best way to build back a club is through the youth development. And you know, Billy Gilmore is probably the first of many Rangers starlets who are probably going to come through. And you know, across Glasgow, you have, for example, Karamoko Dembele, who's been, you know, followed by the press since he was 12, 13, which is really unusual, but you know, he could be the future of Scottish football. And
Hope not.
Do think Scottish football does get a bad rap because, you know, like you said, it's boring, the standards are not correct, it's great, and it's sort of tossed aside as maybe of a more backwards league. But you have managers who can, you know, young managers who want to go to the Scottish League and, you know, get that experience, whether that be, you know, Gerrard is the prime example. And, you know, Brendan Rodgers, after his time at Liverpool, to be honest, I think that Real Madrid game where he benched all his star players was probably the nail in the coffin. But, you know, he went to Celtic, he rebuilt his reputation. Now he's, you know, third in the league with Leicester. So it does show that Scottish football, you know, it has promise, it has potential. And I do think that, you know, Alex McLeish was obviously in charge of the national team before Steve Clarke joined from Kilmarnock. But, you know, you have McTominay, Robertson, Tierney, who I mentioned on one of the previous podcasts, Billy Gilmore coming through. I would say, in terms of goalkeepers, is it Craig Gordon or is it Alan McGregor in goal for Scotland?
It's not Alan McGregor anymore. I think, yeah, Craig Gordon. There's another youngster I can't remember the name of, but yeah, mainly still Craig Gordon, I think.
Actually, speaking of the Scottish national team, I know this is not on our agenda, but what are your hopes and promises for the Scottish national team in the future?
To get to a tournament, JK, I think that the year that we had France and Italy in the group, I think for the Euros, we had France and Italy, and we beat France. James McFadden scored a wonder goal that I can't remember the keeper, but the keeper sort of tapped it in from it was missing, and then the keeper had a howler. And then we lost. I think we had to get a point against Italy in the last game at home to qualify, and we lost the last minute Bonucci goal, I think, from a corner or something like that. And it meant we came third or fourth in the group, and we didn't get a playoff because we weren't the best third place. So that's the closest we've got in my time. I just about remember sort of the 98 World Cup. I was very young at the time, 5 or 6. So I can't really remember it. I remember getting beaten by Brazil 2-1. So, yeah, I think the current fans just want the tournament, and it'll be mental. It will be mental when we get into one. Scotland will take over. I don't know if you remember when Rangers got into the UEFA Cup final and we just took over Manchester, and that was just for a UEFA Cup game. And it'll be the same thing if we get into a tournament. Now, they've extended the Euros, obviously. How many teams are in it now? 48, is it?
I think 48, actually.
Yeah, so you've got to hope that we're going to get into one. This new Nations League thing, because we won our Division 3 games against Israel and Macedonia, I think, or something like that, it means we're in a playoff automatically. So we got a shot in there if it goes ahead, even though we didn't have a good qualifying campaign. I think we just need to instill some pride again, and manager will help. We've had some inconsistent managership, unlucky draws. Like being third or fourth seed in a group is tough. You need to get yourself into being second seed somehow, because you just get drawn with. If you get drawn in a group with Germany, then there's just two games you might as well not play, or you get drawn in a group with Spain. If we got drawn in a group with England, like we just can't compete with these people. It's the same in Europe. I mean, Rangers and Celtic, there's just no hope because they're always going to be last seed. They're always going to have to play round two, round one qualifiers. And then they're going to get drawn up against Barcelona. And you talk about the reputation, and people see on TV is when it's on Sky. But generally, they see the Scottish teams in Europe. So you'll see Celtic when they play Barcelona, and they beat Barcelona with 24% possession or whatever they did. The Nakamura scored. And people just go, well, they play rubbish football. And that isn't true. Like, Celtic don't play rubbish football in the SBL against teams. They score lots of goals. Edouard, Dembele, like, they've got a lot of pace. They keep the ball moving. And also, you play on terrible surfaces a lot of the time in Scotland. So that the model of playing football has to change. But what people see is that approach to how did Celtic beat Barca? How did Celtic beat Stuttgart? How did Rangers, the year they got to the final, how did they beat Fiorentina? Well, they're 2-0 draws and we beat them in a penalty shootout. But that was the only way we're going to win. You can't ask the Rangers players, you can't ask Carlos Cuellar and Maurice Edu and these guys to try and defend Christian Vieri. No, these guys are in different class in Europe. And the Italian fifth best team is going to be better than the Scottish second best team. And that sort of, and again, the Sevilla teams, or Atletico in the UEFA Cup. Like, imagine us trying to compete with a young Aguero and playing proper football to try and do that. It just, people live in this fantasy land that they expect Rangers and Celtic to play proper football all the time. If they're going to be a proper club, it just, I think that's why you get a bad reputation, JK. And it might have changed if all those talks a few years back when Rangers and Celtic might have joined the Premier League, that might have changed everything because we would have got a TV deal. We would have got sponsor deals. We would have got humped like our players. We would have had to have come in with a sort of 3-year safety net, which people wouldn't have liked. But then once we got the money, then we'd have people. We'd be as big a club as anyone, right? We'd have we've got 50,000 people, as we talked about, every week. We're Rangers and Celtic. We come with a derby, and like in the SPL, everyone's got an opinion on us. This is very similar to United and Liverpool in that regard. Like everybody and everyone in the Premiership, whoever you support, you will have a view on Man United and Liverpool. That's my definition of being a big club. It's exactly the same with Rangers and Celtic. Whoever you support, if you're a Partick Thistle fan, you'll still want Rangers or Celtic to win. And that's my definition of being a big club. So look, that would have changed the landscape of Scottish football in terms of you would have then had a Rangers and Celtic that could have competed, and that would have then made the coefficient higher, and then blah, etc., etc., etc. So that's that's quite a lot of stuff in there, but that's why I think the reputation comes from where it is. It's what people see all the time, but it's not unfounded. Like you saw in the Europa League, we try and play Leverkusen. If you don't keep them out for 45 minutes, you've got no hope. But then, interestingly, when Atletico do it to Liverpool, they're heralded as a great team, and it's great management, and no one says the Spanish league's rubbish. So it's a really interesting one for me.
I completely agree. I think it's more to do with people's perception of football as this, the beautiful game. It has to be aesthetically pleasing. Everybody has to play like Man City. Everybody has to play like Barcelona. But, you know, the teams like Atletico Madrid, you know, you probably heard saying, you know, with their players, why don't they play a different style? And the reason why they don't play a different style is because it works for them.
Yeah.
And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, Atletico are masters, not on the pitch in terms of, you know, with the ball, but mentally, because their gamesmanship, their form, you know, their structure, that frustrates teams. And when you're frustrated, you're more likely to make mistakes. And that's why Atletico pounce. And you talk about Celtic beating Barcelona with only 24% possession. You know, possession is just the name of the game. And, you know, possession in your own half, you know, passing it about 10 times to your friend and getting it back, there's no point because there's no end product. And you need to score goals to win. Whether that be, you know, a punt from Connor Goldson all the way to Morelos and he volleys it in, or whether that be, you know, the whole team getting involved in one goal, it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, you have a goal regardless of how you do it. Sure, it may look nicer and people, you know, probably like more likely to make more compilations or on YouTube or something like that. But it's all about, for me, in terms of goals, it's about efficiency. And how can you get the ball from your goalkeeper to the opposition's net in the fastest time possible? And it has to do everything with your players in terms of, you know, what are they good at? Do they fit in a system? That kind of thing. And if the system works for you, then why bother changing it despite you getting bad press for your playing style?
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, Atletico Madrid, Burnley, Sheffield United to a certain extent are sort of encapsulating it because modern football has moved into a lot more, as Jose Mourinho would have called it, PlayStation football.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we need these, as I would call them, dinosaurs of the past to remind us that football is played in more than just one way. And, you know, the Scottish League is physical and, you know, there's not much intricate build-up, but if that's the way the Scottish teams are going to play and to win football matches, then so be it. And
it's the way you're going to win football games in Scotland. And that's this is my point a little bit about why Gerrard gets some stick sometimes is we're planning so much to beat Celtic and do so well in Europe that we're forgetting sometimes we've got to play Ross County on a Saturday or we've got to go away to Kilmarnock on a Sunday after playing on Thursday. And you might have played on a carpet at Leverkusen or you've gone to Spain to their sort of sixth or seventh best team and you've played an absolute, it's a beautiful facility and you've had training grounds and we played at Parkhead last week where it's glorious. We played at Ibrox where it's wide and But then you go to Kilmarnock and it's and the crowd's on top of you and it's lumpy and it's bumpy. And that sometimes gets Gerard a little bit stick, because when our players can't transition between that, and as you can imagine, it's pretty tough. And you see it like in the FA Cup, right? Man United go to League Two or League One, and Liverpool. Their main issue is the facilities. Like they're not getting beat by better players, but the facilities are what they can't deal with. And when teams go to Young Boys, don't they, and play on that plastic grass, that they struggle because the ground is different, and teams aren't prepared for it. So there is an element of that. And I think if Gerrard wanted to really win the Premier League, he would focus on that side of it. You can't, it's not the four games against Celtic that will decide the league. That's how Scotland should win the Premier League if they wanted to. It's the other 34 games. And I think we've got too wrapped up in those four games that, look, if we lost all four but won the league, fans would be happy at the end of the season. Now, I'm not sure where I would sit in that argument, but that would certainly please the fans. And because the fans are just sick of Celtic winning all the time and being such a successful club, I mean, the most successful club of all time. I don't know if you knew that, JK, but we've won the most league titles of any club ever. So we're a team that needs to be winning league titles. So I think that might be the way I would sort of round off sort of Gerrard's next steps might be think more about the other teams and the other stuff that's going on, and don't just think about the sort of the glory days, I would say.
In a way, it's similar to other teams around Europe, as in Celtic's monopoly, you know, Bayern Munich, Juventus, other minor leagues around Europe and globally. And as a fan, sometimes you want that monopoly to end because, you know, like people said, in a negative sort of connotation, Scottish football gets a bad rep because they view it as a monopoly of titles. But if you've, as a Rangers fan, you must be feeling that, you know, you're in a similar situation to, for example, Man United or AC Milan, that you're a big club with rich history, great players in the past, but you can't do it now because, you know, in Rangers' case, you don't have the funding. And, you know, Gerrard doesn't really have the players to do it. Or, in, for example, Milan's case, it's, you know, bad recruitment, the owners not being proper, fit and proper to actually lead. Or in United's case as well, bad recruitment, you know, not fitting into one model. And I look at Rangers and I think, what is this? What's the philosophy? How do Rangers want to play football? And you could say it's trying to get the ball to, you know, Alfredo Morelos as quick as possible so he can put it in the net, or you know try and get, you know, Kemp down the wing and get it to Morelos. But, you know, philosophies have to be instilled from day one, and I'd cite Brighton as the main example, because Brighton under Chris Hughton, you know, get the ball from A to B as quickly as possible. Whereas under Graham Potter there, you know, they play out from the back. You know, they have good interplay. Pascal Gross, Trossard, Mope. I've waxed lyrical about them on this podcast. So that, for me, is a clear indication and change of philosophy. And when Gerrard does move on, Rangers as a club need to decide what their philosophy is. Is it playing out from the back, intricate football? Is it we're going to try to, you know, be more direct into getting the ball to the forward and he's going to hold up play? And not the philosophy of, oh, we just want to win titles. It's about the end result, but it's also about how you get there. Because the fans, you want to see an exciting brand of football, and you want to see, you know, players taking, you know, wingers taking on fullbacks, midfielders making runs, and strikers ultimately scoring goals. So, you know, I cite another example, prime example of this is the Red Bull model at Leipzig, Salzburg, and many of the other clubs around, sister clubs around the world. They have a specific high pressing, playing out from the back model, which works for them, and all their sister clubs produce talent for RB Leipzig, which is the crown jewel. And, you know, what would be interesting is, let's say Rangers got bought over by RB Leipzig, you know, they're called RB Glasgow or something like that. I would say that philosophy would be instilled into Rangers or RB Glasgow and really have, you know, as a fan, I'm 99.9% sure you would actually enjoy the football because it's high pressing, it's high attacking, and it's good to watch because it's end-to-end stuff. And that's why you see Jurgen Klopp buying Naby Keita from Salzburg, Minamino from Salzburg, Mane, who started off at Salzburg, and, you know, Firmino, who also started at Hoffenheim, but he was under Ralf Rangnick, who is the Red Bull sporting director at Hoffenheim. So you see these models of how players have been sort of not brought up to play, but taught how to play in different systems and different playing styles. And that's how I would say football is going to move towards. You have to be versatile. You have to be able to play in different systems, different play styles. And, you know, you always have to stay ahead of the opposition. And that's the thing with Red Bull clubs, in my opinion. They can play various different formations. You know, for example, Leipzig's French trident of Mukiele, Upamecano, and Konate. Mukiele can play at right back. You know, the likes of Lucas Klosterman is filled in at centre back. Halstenberg is filled in at centre back. You know, the versatility in football is going to become more important. And Premier League teams haven't realised it yet. I think that the continent is ahead of Premier League teams at the moment because they don't understand that versatility will come in handy. And, you know, that's the complete antithesis to how, for example, Pep would play. You know how Pep's going to play, or how Sarri played last season at Chelsea. You know, it's predictable, but with a modern team like RB Leipzig, there's always something different because they probably trialed 3-4 systems in training in different scenarios. So
it's that positionless football is so important. I think you're right. I think that it's something that football could learn from other sports, and that's a different podcast we could do entirely. But basketball's gone the same way, rugby's gone the same way, cricket's kind of going the same way. Like, roles are not becoming as clear cut, and I think you're right. And I think that's what Liverpool are doing so much better in terms of midfield and defenders comfortably swapping in and out. When Milner's and Henderson are on the pitch, then Alexander-Arnold will become a winger and they'll become a sort of left back or right back. And just positionless players are becoming so important for everybody. And I think you're right. I think that is something that I hadn't really thought about it until now, but that could be a sort of where future of football is going. And as I say, other sports are doing it really well. American football is another one. You've got sort of quarterbacks now running a lot more, and you've got wide receivers that are throwing it, and defensive players that can play 3 or 4 positions. And loads of sports are understanding that actually we can be positionless in this game. And if everyone can be positionless, then we're impossible to defend.
I completely agree with you, sir. And I feel that this is a great place to end the podcast. Yeah. Thank you so much, Mr. McDonald, for coming on today.
Very enjoyable, JK.
And we'll hopefully have you guest starring on a couple of shows in the future.
more than welcome to ask me. I'll be back as and when you want me. Thank you very much. Love talking about Rangers. Love talking about football. Hopefully we get a bit of good news this weekend about some sport coming back on or something like that from Boris.
Speaking of that, the Bundesliga is actually coming back in 9 days, sir.
Oh, perfect. Like that. I'll be watching that every minute now. JK, take care. Send my love to your family.
Thanks, guys, for watching. And please check out Mr. McDonald's podcast.